The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see Kalshi.com/regulatory.
My fellow Americans, this July, we're celebrating America's birthday at Moda Casino by giving away $1,776,000 in prize. And one lucky winner is going to take home 1 million SC. Happy 250th birthday, America. You're welcome. Download Moto Casino today.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hey, amigos. You know what's really easy to do and even easier to forget? Please help me out and hit that like button if you're listening on YouTube. And if you're listening somewhere else, what the hell? Pop in, give me a thumb. Say hello while you're at it. It helps me a ton with the algorithm. And besides, it's real nice to see you there. And now, on to the show. Hey, welcome back, friend. Good to have you tonight. I can tell by the look on your face that you're unaware it's National Gorilla Suit Day. Yep, and since I happen to have one, and if you must know, it was left to me by my grandfather, I figured today was the day to wear it. Now, that's true, Chester. Not many people keep up on the holidays like we do. Explains why people keep shooting at me. Come on in, friend. Enough monkeying around. Well, that's better. Now, hey, check out simplyscarypodcast.com and click the Patrons Area button. You can get our entire catalog ad-free and available to download or stream for a bargain price. It's so cheap, Sally Struthers forgot about Africa. Now she's working for us. Well, tonight we welcome back our pal Jackson Arthur. In this one, we follow a murderer attempting to transform himself into a god of death through an elaborate ritual. It's kind of a feel-good story. More of a psychological horror story, he says. Fine, Chester, you win. Know it all. So without further delay, from author Jackson Arthur, I give you Within the Temple of Battered Bones. The fallen leaves crunched and crumbled beneath our feet, causing unseen animals and insects to scurry away. I heard them shuffling off into the darkness, fleeing from the two approaching strangers, their scampering sounds echoing through the woods. Taking a moment, I glanced through the treetops. Beyond the bony branches, I could see the sky. It was a clear night, and the stars were crisp and bright. The full moon granted us plenty of light to see our way. Away from the cities, away from the towns, away from all of the man-made light bulbs and fake suns, a person could better appreciate how beautiful the heavens were. And beneath the unadulterated sky and clear heavens, a person could really find freedom. Freedom to truly be themselves, to be whatever form of vile, despicable creature they wanted to embrace. The man walking in front of me, Casey Stewart, stumbled over a discarded branch and fell onto his knees. Through the cloth gag, I heard his muffled sobbing, which sounded more like choking than crying.
Get back on your feet, I demanded. The clock is ticking, and the Reaper waits for no one.
Casey didn't get up. Instead, he knelt there motionless, his head bowed, possibly in some prayer to whatever god might intervene. Joke's on him. Real gods don't care about mercy or salvation. As long as they received their occasional pound of flesh, they wouldn't notice if the world burned. They might piss down from their mountaintops and put out the smoldering ruins of society, but I doubted it. Casey screamed against a mouthful of fabric, which caused him to retch and heave. Nothing came up, luckily, or he might have choked on it.
Back on your feet, I growled. I don't have time for this bullshit.
My fingers wrapped tighter around the metal rebar that I held. Rather than swing the thick piece of steel, I pulled a little electronic box from my coat pocket. My thumb hovered over the red button for a second or two. When Casey still refused to rise, I pressed it. The shock collar hugging his neck produced a quick jolt. He jerked, but still wouldn't stand. Turning the dial on a device, I maxed out the power. Another jolt through the collar finally forced Casey to his feet. Attaboy, I said. Now get moving. My dad, may he rest in hell getting skull-fucked for eternity, occasionally used a shock collar on me whenever he was too tired or drunk to swing a belt. At the time, I hated him for it, but he was teaching me a lesson, showing me the raw power of pain. Pain was brutal and honest. It was a basic language spoken to people on a primal level, like a beautiful painting or melancholic song. Growing up, my father regularly took his pound of flesh from me until I was old enough to show him all that I'd learned. I will never forget that day, because that was the day I realized that even gods could feel pain. My old man actually seemed surprised when I finally strapped the collar around his neck. And when he felt the almighty sting, the piss and blood flowed like the most sensual wine. I gave Casey a sharp shove, and we started moving again. There wasn't any logical path or direction to follow through the woods, but I knew the way. Like the sacred words of Led Zeppelin, we were headed over the hills and far away, and on our way to the houses of the holy, where we would buy our stairway to heaven. After scaling a shallow incline, we came to a steep drop in the land. At the bottom, where the earth leveled out again, I could see the mouth of the cave. The entrance was filled with an impenetrable darkness, like a black hole or portal into some abyss. The sight always gave me chills. Ancient people once viewed cave openings as gateways into the underworld, places where the lands of the living and the dead connected. Strange and otherworldly things were supposedly possible at those intersections. Thankfully, strange and otherworldly was exactly what I was after. Without speaking, I pointed to the cave and made it clear where we were headed. There was a brief hesitation, but I didn't have to shock Casey again. He appeared to have learned his lesson. Reluctantly, I put away the collar's control box. I could still reach it quickly if need be, but I think that Casey might start behaving like a good dog. As we approached the mouth of the cave, a stale, foul wind met us there, coming from deep within. It was filled with the stench of rot and decay, a putrid odor that I found most pleasing. Some smells, like stinky cheese, gasoline, and skunk piss, could tickle the nose hairs of certain people in just the right way. Death was my stinky cheese. Inhaling a long breath, I let the combination of putrid decomposition, hopeless despair, and detestable intentions wash over my tingling taste palates. It tasted better than a spoonful of ice cream or a glass of top-shelf bourbon. For the first time in years, I thought of Tyler Matthews. It had been Halloween night, 25 years ago. My dad had been passed out drunk since that afternoon, so I decided to go out and look for some free candy. I didn't have a costume, so I pulled some of my father's dirtiest, most soiled clothes from the hamper and grabbed an empty bottle of PBR from the coffee table. With my black hair purposely disheveled, I went trick-or-treating as my old man. Pissing myself would have completed the look, but I didn't have that level of commitment.
"You pathetic little nothing,"
I grunted in my best dad voice.
"Fuck you looking at, you little ant. I'll step on you, you little fucking ant. Grab me another beer. Attaboy."
Having one of my dad's old belts wrapped loosely around my waist gave me a sense of authority. The worn leather and dried blood filled me with an unexpected power. On that side of the belt, I walked with my shoulders high and my chest puffed out. I stood on the shoulders of giants and peered down at the scattering ants. It would be someone else's turn on the whipping post, forced to cower beneath the swinging leather. Someone else. Not me. Not that night. After trick-or-treating for nearly an hour, my plastic shopping bag half full with sweets, I found myself at the edge of town, where the houses were sparse and further apart. Either trick-or-treating was over or everyone had run out of candy, because the few people that had been outside were gone. Sidewalks and porches had been abandoned. Homes were a little darker than before. With Halloween nearly done, I could still feel the mountain of pent-up energy in my chest. I wasn't ready for it to be over. I wasn't ready to give back the belt. As I strolled along a quiet street, I noticed another kid, someone else who was alone like me. The other kid, a young boy, noticed me too and rushed over.
"Have you seen my mom?"
he asked frantically. A nearby streetlight reflected in his tears.
"I can't find her."
"I'm not sure,"
I blurted.
"Where did you see her last?"
"I don't know. She was right behind me."
I couldn't be sure if I knew the boy, because most of his features were hidden beneath the greatest Batman costume that I had ever seen. It was a full suit, with a cape and cowl. It even came with a gold utility belt, shiny and void of blood. It was expensive and clean and powerful, something only loving parents would buy their son. The boy tightly gripped a black cloth bag, one that had a golden Batman symbol sewn into its side. The sack was bulging at the seams, overly stuffed with loads of sweet goodies. My own bag, a plastic monstrosity from the local grocery store, seemed silly by comparison.
"I think I saw someone over there,"
I said, pointing toward a house that was still in the early stages of construction.
"Let's go. It might be your mom."
"Is it her?"
the boy asked, relief setting into his eyes.
"You really think so?"
"It might be,"
I said.
"It might be her. No, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it's her."
"Thank you,"
he replied, the sound of tears remaining in his voice.
"I was so scared."
"It'll be okay,"
I assured him, patting him briefly on the shoulder.
"I'll take care of you, okay? Now let's go."
As we walked toward the construction site, I noticed the boy eyeing my clothes, belt, and beer bottle. Even though his face was mostly obscured, something resembling pity touched his expression.
"Thank you,"
the boy repeated. When there wasn't anyone at the construction site, mothers or otherwise, the young boy panicked. His voice rose to a high-pitched squeal.
"Are you sure she was here? Mom? Mom?"
"Yeah,"
I replied, and then abruptly pointed toward the rear of the building.
"I think I just saw someone back there. There's someone back there, I swear."
We left the sidewalk and made our way around the side of the building, the boy walking a couple of steps ahead. Away from the lights of the street, the shadows formed crevices that appeared bottomless. My father's belt wasn't shiny or clean, but it was far more powerful than some golden bullshit. I didn't take it off, though. My old man preferred the swinging leather, but I could do better. Hitting someone in the head with a bottle wasn't like in the movies. It didn't explode into a million shards of glass. When I struck the boy in the back of his skull, the bottle never even cracked. The boy stumbled and flailed, blood seeping through the fresh gash in his cowl, and it was a beautiful sight. But there was something missing. Instead of a sharp breaking sound, the impact had been dull and hollow. Empty. The power that I had expected wasn't there. So I quickly discarded the bottle and plucked a twisted piece of steel from a pile of construction scraps. Rushing at the boy, I hit him again, much harder. And the vibration of steel against bone was everything that I had dreamed.
Why did you get to have a mom?
I growled.
Why did you get to be Batman?
The boy crumbled to the ground and rolled onto his back. In a flash, I was standing over him, the steel bar raised above my head. His eyes were wide and wild, but they had a glossy quality. His mouth opened as if to scream, but I brought the metal down too quickly, fracturing his jaw before he could make a sound.
Little fucking ant,
I barked, and then hit him again, cracking his eye socket.
Attaboy.
After shattering every inch of the boy's skull, I felt like the most powerful being that had ever existed. I had broken Batman, filled his flawless cowl with flowing blood and battered bones. But I couldn't stick around to admire my work. Once I was sure that the boy was dead, I snatched his bag of candy from the ground, adding his loot to my own. After retrieving my dad's beer bottle, I quickly ran away, disappearing into the ether like a phantom. The boy had been all over the news for the following week or so. Tyler Matthews, 9 years old. They called it a horrific act, a tragedy unparalleled. For me, though, it was an awakening. I had found my calling, my purpose. With an act of sheer will, a little ant like me had shaken the entire anthill to its foundation. My hometown was never the same after that, but fuck them. I would have stepped on every single one of them if I had the chance.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Casey unexpectedly halted a foot inside the cave, pulling me from my fond memory. Keep going, I demanded. We're almost there. Casey's shoulders went limp as if he had suddenly fallen asleep. I knew better, though. He wasn't sleeping. He had finally given up. Grabbing the thick chain that bound his wrists, I guided the broken man along, like a ripe heifer being led to slaughter. We walked another 100 yards or so, our footsteps creating a storm of echoes that bounced back and forth along the rocks, over and over, spiraling and growing around us, until the noise was maddening. Through the madness, we marched onward, until a familiar sight appeared in the distance, a dancing and shifting illumination Pulling Casey along, we followed the fluid glow, until ultimately entering into a large oval cavern. Hanging from the coarse wall were 12 burning torches, which created a halo of light and shadow, filling the space with the illusion of motion. A stifled gasp caught in Casey's lungs as his sight adjusted. Alongside the 12 torches were 12 naked corpses, hanging like marionettes from the rock wall, all their wrists bound with the same thick chain as him.
"Aren't they beautiful?" I asked.
With pure blunt force, every bone had been twisted and distorted, making it nearly impossible to discern male from female. Decaying flesh and muscle and meat hung from their battered, broken bodies. The fresher ones still pulsated with juicy, hungry insects that thrived and flourished within the carnage.
"Aren't they perfect?"
Beneath their dangling feet, 12 distinct sigils were visible within the torchlight. Each one had been etched into the rock with patience and precision. It had been crucial to get every little detail exactly right. Every line and every curve had to be flawless. My temple was nearly complete, but would it be enough to please them? Catching me in a daze as I admired my sacrifice and hard work, Casey desperately struck me with bound hands, hitting me hard on the side of the face. A thin, hot line formed across my cheek and stars briefly filled my vision. As I stumbled a step backwards, he turned to run. If I hadn't been so quick to reach the control for the collar, he may have gotten further away. Swiftly, I mashed the red button, sending a jolt of instant pain into Casey's throat. The shock caused him to stumble, providing me an opportunity to swing the rebar. The piece of metal connected with his right knee and echoes of the shattering bone filled the cavern. Casey's voice would have joined the echoes, creating a chorus of pain, but the gag contained the screaming. Even with his knee broken, Casey tried to run, but ultimately crumpled to the dirt when his leg gave out. Cocking back the rebar, I hit him again, cracking a couple of his ribs. With one final strike to the back of his skull, I put Casey to sleep. I didn't hit him hard enough to kill, because I needed Casey to breathe for a little bit longer. The timing of his death was another factor that had to be exactly right. It was like a dance. One misstep or wrong move would ruin the whole thing. Lifting Casey's body like a baby, I carried him to the center of the cavern and then dropped him back to the dirt. With a flick of my foot, I rolled him fully onto his back so that his slack face could admire the stalactites above. Murdering Tyler Matthews, the boy in the Batman costume all those years ago, had been the first step in an incredible journey. It briefly allowed a tiny nothing boy to feel like the most powerful being alive. So, I killed again, and again, and again. I was like an addict chasing their first high. Over time, the killing was no longer enough. I needed more. More power. More control. I wasn't a true god. Not yet. Another name popped into my head. Constance Morrell. Constance Morrell hadn't been the final step in my journey to godhood, but was one of the most important ones, and she most certainly was one of the most difficult steps for me to maneuver, mainly because she had been nearly impossible to find. The self-proclaimed voodoo priestess had retreated from the world and hadn't been seen in many years. I tracked her down, though, leaving a trail of broken bodies along the way. I was determined, highly focused, and anyone in my way had their lives beaten from their bones. The swamp had been fully alive the night I finally caught up to Constance. A cacophony of singing insects filled the air like moving electricity, their buzzing and chirruping rolling through in waves. The wings of unseen bats fluttered all around, darting back and forth, gathering mouthfuls of buzzing insects with each pass. Large bodies consistently broke the surface of the nearby water, hulking shadows that rolled and then swam away. Among the many sounds of the swamp, the high-pitched screaming emanating from the small cabin was the most animalistic. As I shattered another one of Constance's fingers, she filled her tiny home with a sweet song of pain.
"Where is it?" I demanded again. "Tell me, and I will stop."
Constance was small and much older than I had expected. Her frail form and bony edges were exacerbated by the active fireplace. Her hair was an entanglement of black and silver strands, which fell onto her narrow shoulders and hunched back. But the woman was far tougher than she looked. It had been easy to physically overpower her, to strap her down in a chair. But the voodoo priestess wasn't talking, no matter how many bones I pulverized.
"Where is the book? I know you have it. Give it to me."
Constance sneered and then spit a wad of blood at my face, some of it entering into my mouth, falling upon my tongue. I savored the essence of her life, letting it caress my taste buds before swallowing. I brought the 2-foot strip of rebar down onto the other hand, directly across the knuckles, and she howled like a banshee.
"This can stop at any time," I insisted. "You just have to tell me where you've hidden the Tenay Mortem."
Constance laughed, showing me her crimson-covered teeth. Her dark face was glistening with sweat and uncontrollable tears, but her brown eyes were unwavering, unfaltering in their glare.
"Such a big book,"
she finally said.
"For such a small man. What you gonna do with a book so big, small man?"
"Small?" I asked as I stooped down, getting nose to nose with her.
"Do I look small to you?"
"You look teeny tiny,"
she replied, a smirk touching her lips.
"Teeny tiny."
With my free hand, I grabbed hold of her throat and squeezed, making sure to focus the pressure on her windpipe. Without access to air, the arrogant expression on her face was quickly replaced with wide-eyed fear. Her mouth began opening and closing like a fish on dry land, but I would not permit her a single breath. Her arms struggled against the chains, but they failed to break free. The muscles of her narrow neck tightened, and she tried to twist away from my grasp. I saw it as a challenge and gripped her throat even tighter.
"Who's small now?"
Without air, she couldn't answer, but that was fine. She didn't need to. I choked her to the brink of passing out and then abruptly let go. Taking a step back, I watched with pride as Constance heaved and gasped.
"Where is the Tenay Mortem?"
I asked for the 1,000th time.
"When you give it to me, I will go away. If you don't tell me where it is, I will beat you to death, tear this place apart at the seams, and find it anyway. So, make it easy on yourself and tell me."
"The Tenay Mortem,"
she replied,
"is of the original power, passed down and hidden from the sins of man for generations. It is the tome of death, and there is no place for it in this world. But it cannot be destroyed by any mortal means, so it must be kept safe. Safe from small men like you."
"You can't keep it from me," I argued. It is mine by right. Mine by destiny.
No, it is not. And it is not here. So you have wasted your time beating a helpless old woman.
I know that it is here, somewhere, I insisted. I can feel it. I can feel it calling to me. It wants my anger. It wants my rage.
You lie,
Constance spat. I ducked down again. As I met her glare with my own, I recalled my victims. Visualizing their faces, their bodies, and how they looked in the end. I drew forth the insatiable hunger that drove me to break and murder. And I showed it to Constance. I allowed her to see the darkness, to witness its raw desire. She would not deny my fate. She couldn't. My purpose was clear, and the gods were calling me to them. Who was she to stand in my way? Startled by what she had seen, Constance quickly pulled her eyes away and lowered her head. Her lips started moving, but her voice was too low to hear. At first, I thought she was praying, begging mercy from whatever gods might save her. However, when I bent in closer, I realized my mistake. The flames in the fireplace behind me, which had been low burning, erupted in a blazing fury, throwing a wall of heat onto my backside. Candles had been placed haphazardly throughout the cabin, scattered across tables and window sills, and they sprung to life as well. Like an inflamed beacon, the inside of the cabin glowed brighter and brighter. I threw up a hand to shield my eyes, but I wouldn't take my sights from Constance, who was still mumbling in a low, frantic voice. Something large slammed into the nearest window. Reluctantly, I turned my head away from Constance and looked. A large black bird had flown into the glass, broke its neck, and was slowly sliding toward the ground, leaving a crimson smear in its wake. Within seconds of the first, another bird impacted the same window, and then another, and another. The buzzing of insects was no longer background noise. It was a swarm of chaos that drew closer and closer to the cabin. I peered through the blood-smeared window and then shifted my eyes to the others. Even in the dark of night, I could see the black cloud of insects, large and small and in between, circling the cabin. And then I heard splashing. Large reptilian bodies were bursting from the water and bounding onto the land. A multitude of guttural growls suddenly filled the night. Gators. And big sons of bitches by the sound of them. Constance was calling the swamp to her aid, and my time was running out. I had to silence her, or my destiny would come to an abrupt ending. I gripped the rebar harder than I ever had before, and swung with all my strength, striking Constance across the side of her skull. The old, fragile skin tore open as her head whipped violently to the left. Blood poured down the side of her face, some of it running into her right eye. Constance's voice had stopped, but I wasn't taking any chances. I hit her again, even harder, making sure to strike the same spot. The flesh of her temple tore even deeper, revealing crimson and white, blood and bone. Her neck bent awkwardly, the top of her spine pushed to its limit. I kept swinging, aiming every attack at the same spot of her skull, caving in the side of her head further and further, until finally the top of her spine broke at the bend. With a crack of bone, Constance went limp. As she died, the swamp fell silent, and the candles went out. The fireplace returned to its normal boring state of low-burning logs. Why hadn't I simply killed her to begin with? I would have saved myself a whole lot of trouble. Maybe I was growing soft. It was a mistake I wouldn't be making a second time. After I caught my breath, I started searching the cabin for the Tenay Mortem. It took a long time, but I eventually found the ancient grimoire underneath a loose floorboard along the right side of the fireplace. When I lifted the weathered book from its hiding spot, I could not only feel its dense weight, but its immense age. No one was exactly sure when the book had been created, but the Tenay Mortem was easily one of the oldest grimoires in existence. The Egyptian Book of the Dead and the Unholy Necronomicon were infants compared to what I was holding in my hands. I could feel that power and wisdom pouring into me. For several seconds, I turned it over and over in my hands, marveling at it. The cover and binding of the Tenay Mortem was solid black, a black so deep that it almost had a three-dimensional quality, as if it wasn't a book, but an endless abyss. There wasn't any writing on the outside of the grimoire either. Not a single word disturbed the perfect darkness. Briefly, I flipped through the worn parchment, feeling the coarse texture beneath my fingertips. The pages were bent and wrinkled with age and use, but the black writing, the words and symbols, were perfectly legible. Using the rebar, I stirred the dull flames of the fireplace, exciting them, enticing them to burn hotter. Slowly, I pulled and twisted free a few of the logs, letting them fall onto the cabin's floor. The fire was hungry and spread the moment it made contact. Giving Constance Morrell a final glance, I exited the burning cabin and disappeared into the swamp.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Using the tip of the rebar, I carved 12 different sigils into the hard dirt around Casey's unconscious body, the same ones that I etched into the cave wall. I took my time, drawing each line and curve with accuracy and care. After drawing each sigil, I spoke a single word. Decay. Despair. Destruction. Greed, gluttony, loneliness, madness, denial, hatred, sacrifice, stagnation, inevitability. Gripping the piece of metal tight in both hands, I held it high above the unconscious man and began to call out the gods of death.
Chikal, Murugan, Don, and Mananan. Vir para adiante. The first 12 deaths are yours.
Bringing the rebar down with all of my strength, I heard Casey's skull crunch. His eyes shot open, wide with panic, yet glossy with fleeting thought. They began to dart around, confused and unsure of what was happening. His eyes then fluttered for several seconds before finally falling shut again. As his conscious mind slipped away, his bound hands reached out toward me, begging me to stop. But the act felt robotic and subconscious. His life was nearly gone, and the reptile brain was making one last plea for mercy.
Anubis, Osiris, Siker, and Nephthys. Tael, Ila Hermami. The first 12 deaths are yours.
The rebar fell even harder, creating a spiderweb across Casey's forehead, allowing crimson fluids to seep through the crevices. As blood poured into his nasal passages, his breathing became raspy and shallow. Muscle spasms suddenly seized him, contorting his body, causing his arms and legs to tighten and flail.
Hades, Thanatos, Keres, and Meleno, Erkontai pros taimpros. The first 12 deaths are yours.
In a frenzy of blows, I bombarded every inch of Casey's body with solid steel until I became too tired to lift my arms. The spasms and flailing ceased as his breathing slowed dramatically, falling lower and lower until he was barely pulling a whisper of air into his punctured lungs. Casey was gone, but his body held on for nearly another minute.
This death,
I said, as Casey took his last blood-filled gasp,
belongs to me.
Pools of blood formed beneath and around Casey's body, but the ground refused to take it, like water refused oil. 12 crimson lines began stretching out from the pools of blood, like narrow tentacles, writhing and crawling across the dirt floor. One by one, each of the 12 tentacles reached the 12 sigils and slowly filled in the precise markings with dark crimson. Bringing the rebar close to my face, I admired the basic yet powerful rod of steel. The piece of metal was almost elegant in its simplicity, masking its true potential with a design that was pure and honest. Dark bits of blood, both old and fresh, spotted the side of the shaft. The larger bits pooled beneath its steel ribs. I could see tiny, nearly microscopic nicks and dents in the metal. Wounds formed when the bones had fought back. The rebar was truth, an incorruptible force of nature, and I would soon be just as powerful as that simple shaft of steel. Dragging its jagged tip across the palm of my left hand, I cut just deep enough to draw a shallow line of blood.
Pradiant spiritus lapsorum,
I said, the temple booming with my echoing voice.
Prodiant comestores damnatorum, surge et quaere sanguine meum, surge et vini, mors apto te, mors subiace voluntate mea. Mors, nunc exe.
Balling my hand into a fist, I clasped down onto the fresh wound, forcing a thin trickle of blood to fall from my palm. Several small droplets dripped onto the beaten man's butchered abdomen, splotches of living blood mixing with the recently dead. A second later, an invisible wave of energy extinguished the burning torches, abruptly plunging the cavern into absolute darkness. All of my senses were instantly washed away. I was floating in a sea of nothingness, neither alive nor dead, but in between. Everything that I was, past, present, and future, instantly nullified within that chasm of emptiness. I swam in the great black void that separated the living and the dead. But I wasn't just inside of it. I had become part of it as well. It was my master, and I was its servant. A single torch abruptly relit, and its light pulled me back to the land of the living. The torch's single flame emitted a shallow yellow orb by which I could see the dead man hanging from the wall next to it. My pulse quickened with the memory of the man's brutal bludgeoning. He hadn't been my first kill, but he had been the first of the 12, which made him very special. A slight shiver of pleasure rose from my toes and into the rest of my body, as I recalled how easy it had been to grab the man during an early morning jog. The pleasure plateaued into the center of my brain when I finally remembered how hard I had beaten him. At first, it seemed to be a trick of the light, an illusion created by the glow of the flame shifting across the rotten corpse. Was the dead man moving? Wiggling? Shimmying? The movement suddenly grew broader and more drastic, like the slithering of an agitated snake, until the entire body was spasming and jerking. He writhed and twisted his battered bones as if fighting against the chain by which he hung, his ruptured eyes peering at me. Another torch ignited, revealing the second man on the wall. That corpse immediately began to thrash and flail too, as if repeatedly struck with a cattle prod or shock collar at max voltage. One by one, all 12 torches caught fire, revealing a floundering corpse hanging by its side. All around me, the bodies danced and danced like marionettes, their strings pulled by a demented puppet master. As they danced their maddening dance, their battered bones popped and cracked, while their flesh made slapping sounds against the rock wall. And when their dance appeared to be peaking in its lunacy and hysteria, the chains that bound them broke, and they simultaneously fell to the dirt floor of the cavern. Their bodies were too badly wrecked to hold their weight, so they crumpled like slabs of butchered meat to the dirt. Yet they began to move in my direction, crawling and dragging their rotten forms across the ground, their bones grinding and rubbing, their entrails dragging limply behind them. The circle of death closed in around me as, like spiders with broken limbs, they pulled and heaved themselves, inch by inch, until they were nearly upon me. But then they stopped, the chorus of battered bones silencing. For nearly a minute, I could hear my own breathing and nothing else. My attention shifted back and forth between the corpses as I wondered what they were waiting for. Their spoiled eyeballs stared up at me, unblinking, unmoving. The sea of stench that flooded my nose was overwhelming, even for me. My entire life I had believed myself to be beyond the grasp of real fear. However, standing at the center of all that death, I felt the touch of something foreign, a sensation that could only have been dread. Had I done something wrong? The ritual seemed to have gone perfectly. But what if it hadn't? What if I had messed something up? I've spent 2 years researching, prepping, planning, and executing so that nothing would go wrong. I slaved over every detail, every kill. What if I missed something? Should I have spent more time getting things right? My mind retraced every step, but could not find a single mistake in my execution. "Decay," I said, sighting the first sigil again. To my surprise, one of the corpses placed a shattered hand on that symbol, causing it to glow a bright crimson. So I continued.
"Despair, destruction, greed, gluttony, loneliness, madness, denial, hatred, sacrifice, stagnation, inevitability."
After each word, another corpse reacted, and another sigil lit up, until all 12 were glowing.
It was working.
The gods of the underworld were welcoming me into their circle. I would no longer be a simpleton who chased the deaths of others, only to be left behind once the killing was done. I would no longer need to find satisfaction with one measly murder at a time. I would be death itself, until the end of eternity. When the final symbol lit, I heard a low groaning sound coming from directly below me. Casey unexpectedly retched, his mouth wide open in a silent scream. There was something in his throat, something bulging against his windpipe, fighting to break free. Curiously, I watched the bulge move upward. Within the darkness of his gaping mouth, a blue light began taking shape. The light grew brighter and brighter, until eventually a shimmering orb rose from between the dead man's dislocated jaws. The orb was as much liquid as light. It continued to rise into the air before hovering level with my chest. The colors of the orb silently rolled and crashed into itself, like the bluest waves of the most serene, most magnificent ocean. I have never seen anything so beautiful. If love actually existed, it would look like that. I reached forward, eager to grab hold of the orb. The desire to possess it was overwhelming, like nothing that I had ever felt. It would be mine, and there would be many more to come. My hand never reached the orb, though, because a roar of hissing and snarling suddenly poured forth from the 12 rotten gods, their intense displeasure startling me. From the sounds they were making, the gods were no longer pleased with what I was doing. That foreign feeling touched me once more. Fear, or dread, or whatever. But why? What have I done wrong? Slowly, I advanced my hand an inch closer to the orb and was immediately bombarded with wordless bawling and howling, a venomous discharge that shook me down deep. What was happening? My mind reeled and rolled as I internally searched for some kind of answer. And then I had an unexpected epiphany, a realization so obvious, so clear, that it should have never been overlooked. Gods were selfish, arrogant, and I was surrounded by 12 of them. I had brought them forth, but I could not fully control them. My ritual would only go so far. At some point, their true natures would take over. The orb was exposed and ripe for the taking, but I wasn't the one who felt its draw. They felt it too. And gods don't share. Until I possessed my first orb, I wasn't one of them yet, and I had come too far to fail. Thrusting my hand quickly toward the orb, I tried to take it, but wasn't fast enough. An onslaught of fractured hands were upon me in an instant, and they were stronger than I thought possible. The 12 corpses started grappling my lower body, nearly pulling me down, seemingly reinvigorated by the holy and undeniable pull of the orb. Restrained, I continued reaching toward the orb with my empty hand, but my body was being pulled backward and away from it. With my other hand, I started to wildly swing the rebar. There was a hard crack as the steel connected with a skull, followed by a shrill screech of outrage. How could some simple man deny the gods their bounty? Would the fragile mortal dare defy them? Oh, I would do more than simply deny them. Once I possessed the orb, I would drink in the waves like forbidden nectar, and then spit the leftover juice in their faces. Swinging the rebar even harder, I struck out at anything within reach.
Fuck you!
I screamed while the orb floated just beyond my fingertips.
I will have it! I will be a god!
I was so close, but there were too many, and they were too strong. My hand would never reach it, I admitted. Pulling my arm back, I doubled my grip on the rebar and continued swinging. By that point, the corpses were climbing me, and it was difficult to strike them with much force. But I tried, damn it. I fucking tried. I beat and bashed whatever flesh and bone that I could, no matter how awkward the angle. They were gods, but the bodies they inhabited were weak, vulnerable. If I could break them into enough pieces, maybe I could get free. The orb must have felt our collective need because its glow grew brighter and brighter. The blue waves became more animated as well, crashing and pummeling harder and harder against themselves. It wanted to be possessed, I realized. As much as we desired it, it desired us as well. It was the natural course of things, yin and yang, life and death. One of us had to take the orb into the great black void and across to whatever underworld existed beyond. There was only one question. Would it be the old gods or the new? Finding more strength and determination deep within myself, I attacked with increased vigor. Not like the mortal that I was, but like the supreme being that I was destined to become. In the end, I would be the last one remaining, and I would no longer need to stand on the shoulders of any giant, because I would be one of those titans, glaring down at the scared ants scattering around my feet. And that was Within the Temple of Battered Bones by author Jackson Arthur. A good reminder that if you're applying to become a death god, make sure they're hiring first. A little about the author. After being brutally mauled by a dog as a toddler, Jackson Arthur grew up with a stutter, which caused him to be socially awkward. I feel you, brother. Instead of interacting with people, he chose to hide his nose in books, causing him to fall in love with fiction. At an early age, he began reading Goosebumps and Fear Street before graduating to more adult novels like The Stand and The Green Mile. His love of strange stories blossomed into the desire to creep people out with his own brand of weird tales. If you enjoyed this story, be sure to visit VeloxBooks.com and pick up his book, of which this story is the title track, The Temple of Battered Bones. Also available on Audible. Thanks, Jackson.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I'm afraid this is where we part ways, at least till tomorrow. Be sure to visit me on the Sinister Somnolence YouTube channel for my new show, The Crimson Hour, every Saturday night at 7 Central. So grab a drink for the road, friend. But stay low out there, would you? You kinda look like a gorilla all on your own. And may the wind be at your back. May the road rise up to meet you. Hit that like button on your way out, would you? And until next time, go fuck yourselves. Not a bad start to season 8, huh? Good night, friends.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily, and the best part, guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.